Season 2, episode 11. This week, we're going in the World Wide Web and we're going across the big pond all the way to Toronto in Canada. And I'm delighted to be joined this week. My guest is Talk. How are you doing, sir? You're very welcome.
Hello, hello. I'm doing fantastic. I'm very happy to be here. Finally happy to be here.
Delighted to have you here, sir. Delighted to have you here. What a brilliant year 2022 has been for you, eh?
It was crazy. I like the A at the end. Very Canadian.
Yeah, because I believe if you go to Newfoundland, they speak with an Irish accent. I think it's a Tipperary accent.
Yeah, it's definitely, I can definitely hear the similarities for sure. Yeah. 2022 was crazy. The second half specifically was nuts. Pretty much August onwards or July onwards. It was a dream come true, really.
Yeah, I follow you on Instagram, and you're very active on Instagram, and your stories are great, and it's just wonderful to see an artist growing. And what's also lovely too is that it's you're in control of your Instagram still at this time, anyway.
Of course, yeah. I have control issues, so I have to be in control at all times.
That's not a bad thing at all.
No, it's an advantage right now.
Absolutely. Now, I invited you onto the podcast this week to chat about the four songs you've written that are most personal to you. Now, the first one that you've chosen is Save Me. So why did you choose this one, Talk?
I chose this one because it was the first, probably the oldest song. So on that six-song EP I released in 2021, this is the first song, the oldest song from that EP. And I think I wrote it, at least started writing it in 2017.
Okay.
I had a friend that was going through kind of a rough time and I didn't really know how to process the emotions. And I would try and communicate with this person and try and talk to her. And nothing was really getting through. And I didn't know how to process the situation. So I just wrote the song. But I wrote it kind of from my point of view, but also like from their point of view, and it kind of sat for a couple of years. And then there's a couple of producers in New York City. They were kind of the first bigger producers I'd worked with in 2018, I think, Ken Lewis and Brent Colatalo, who worked on a million songs, and they had heard the song and they're like, this is amazing. Let's just work on it a bit. So we added a couple parts, but it's kind of like the first experience I had working.
Okay.
With producers.
So it's the beginning of your journey in a way, I guess, when you moved up a level.
Exactly. Yeah. I went from like working in my bedroom to like collaborators, and this was kind of the first project.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll have a listen to the song and then we'll come back and chat some more about it.
Sure.
Okay. So this is the first song that my guest this week, Talk, has chosen. And this is the gorgeous Save Me.
Lost and I can't find my way. Looking back on all of my mistakes. Somebody get me out of my skin. A place I hate living in. People always telling me that there's nothing wrong with me. Feels like I'm nothing, won't you save me? From the darkness, won't you save me? I'm so broken, won't you save me? Save me from myself. Got to get out of my head. Sometimes I think there's one way out. I always stop myself somehow. People always telling me that there's nothing wrong with me. I won't let it keep me down. No, I won't let it keep me down for very long. Feels like I'm nothing, won't you save me? Now I'm counting the hours. Got left in this place. Feels like I'm nothing. Won't you save me from the darkness? Won't you save me? I'm so broken. Won't you save me? I'm sinking further, can you save me? When I was lost, nothing can save me. I'll pay any cost to save me. Save me from myself. Save me from myself. Save me from myself.
I love the opening lyrics. Lost and I can't find my way, looking back on all of my mistakes. Somebody get me out of my skin, a place I hate living in. When you're feeling that low, it's just the most horrible walls closing in kind of feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think the only way I could process like my feelings and personally wrote about feelings was with that. And it sat on my computer for a long time. I didn't exactly know what to do with it. I think it also marks a transition from like finding my sound. Like that song doesn't particularly exactly feel like all my other songs.
Okay.
And that was also the first song that I sang with more of like a rock gravelly voice. I used to sing a little bit more reserved, and then I had a couple guys push me to try and kind of rock it up a bit, and it suited everything, and it felt really good.
And I guess too, with it being reserved, you know, when you're working on your own in your bedroom and you're self-producing and all that, I suppose when there's more to give, it's hard for us to push it, but it's always easier when other people are there behind and you kind of
giving you a little bit more. I think it was a big change. Like I had done it in my room alone for years, and then all of a sudden I kind of got thrown into working with 100 different people, and it's what I needed to figure out who I was by borrowing little pieces from all these people and working on a sound that I thought represented me and something that felt unique, which I think this does.
Yeah, now growing up, and I always ask every guest this, what were your, I guess when we're young first, our influences are very much our parents' music. And then when we kind of become teenagers, we develop our own style. So growing up for you first, what were your initial artists that would have inspired you? And then when you became a teenager, who started to develop in your mind?
I think my first listening experiences were, my dad is a big music guy, and so it was like the Monkees, the Beatles, Glen Campbell, Mamas and the Papas, anything from Laurel Canyon in the 60s.
Wow.
That was like, I still know all the songs on all those CDs. I don't know what they're called, but my dad had a very small rotation of CDs that I memorized for sure. And I still love all that music. I think I probably love that music more now. I had a bit of a break when I was a teenager, and I was really into, I'm still really into Coldplay. I think Coldplay's one of the greatest bands ever. I think Chris Martin's a genius.
Agreed.
And I think he probably inspired me the most in terms of message and songs too, like Talk, that comes from Coldplay, the Coldplay song Talk. That's where I named myself.
Okay.
That's that. And I Don't Shut Up. I never shut up. But I wanted to carry a piece of them with me because they inspired me to like want to help and inspire others. And they really helped me out of a dark time. And so I kind of figured I hope I can do the same for others.
Yeah. I read that actually somewhere that you kind of thank Coldplay for saving you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they played a big part in me kind of climbing out of the dark hole I was in.
And then climbing out of that dark hole that you were in, Talk, did it help you then, I guess, when your friend was going through the hard time to kind of see it from their point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I all the emotions that my friend was experiencing, I had already experienced before, and so that's what I found so frustrating. Is like, I know this can improve, I know this can get better, I know this can change, but I know that person can't hear me right now, and no matter what I say, no matter what I do, And that's why I didn't know what to deal, how to deal with it, and that's why Save Me kind of came about.
The other lyrics that really kind of stand out to me is "Feels like I'm nothing, won't you save me from the darkness, won't you save me?" And it's kind of like this person pleading. And I wondered, were they pleading to anybody to save me, or was it more they were pleading to themselves? It was a conversation with themselves.
I think it's more like with yourself. I think when I was at my worst, I think that I was, It was a lot of like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? What are you doing? And it's a lot of introspective stuff. And I think even like during the pandemic, there's probably been a lot of that too. People had time alone with themselves for the first time. And so I think this song, even though it's older, it still kind of stands the test of time.
It's very relevant because I don't know about over your side of the world. I'm sure it is the same, but definitely here in Ireland. And now that we're kind of out of lockdowns and the pandemic is kind of starting to be in our rear view mirror, although it's still around, that the one thing that came out of it is an awful lot of people started to suffer with mental health issues here in Ireland. Now, thankfully, we're now at a time where people are more open to talk about it. You know, it's kind of like there's more work needs to be done, but it's not bad so far.
Yeah, I think the conversations are happening. And I think compared to even 10 years ago, 10 years ago, it's like an extreme 180 from what it was.
Yeah.
Before, people had no idea what any of the stuff meant, or what depression or anxiety or any of that stuff really meant, or what it was. And now people kind of have an understanding of it.
Yeah. And I guess how I can always judge it, I was with somebody 21 years ago, which I was engaged to her, and she died by suicide. And I remember at the time, there was this whole hush hush kind of thing where people were like, I will
like
say
a shame thing.
Yeah. Say she died some other way. And I'm like, what? You know, what? And, and now, thankfully, people don't have to hide that anymore. You know, it's just like if you fall and cut your hand, it's quite obvious what the wound is, but you can't see the wound that's inside in your mind.
Right. No, I agree. I fully agree.
Yeah. And I guess as well as Coldplay being one of the kind of acts that inspired you when you became a teenager, and for very personal reasons, which is what music is all about, who else would have been there in your
formative years? Elton John, for sure. Freddie Mercury, Queen. I think my new album I'm working on right now is very Queen influenced. And my music always has been very harmony heavy and big rock chords and big guitar solos. Just kind of like, I love what Queen is doing. So I guess a lot of artists in the UK, I guess that's kind of a thing. I wonder who else. The Foo Fighters, Dave Grohl is a big influence on my song structure. And the one record, Echo Silence, Patience and Grace, that whole album, I really listened to that a lot. And I think that taught me a lot about how to structure songs, and like it starts somewhere, ends somewhere different kind of mentality, which I try and do with everything.
Yeah.
Alice in Chains, some of the grunge stuff. I really loved Alice in Chains Unplugged for some reason. Like I didn't really listen to their original stuff, but that Unplugged album is probably one of my most listened to things of all time.
Do you know what? The same here. That's how I got into Alice in Chains, was from that Unplugged album video.
Yeah, I've heard their like original stuff, and it's great, like the original songs. But for some reason, the Unplugged one is just, I mean, I think it was just before he died.
Yeah.
And I think it was kind of like an intense thing and very emotional. And, so them,
wasn't it very sad too when Lane Staley died? I mean, he was lay undiscovered for a number of weeks, and I remember when it happened being very sad, because here's this guy who fronted this amazing band, yet he wouldn't let anybody near him. The demons and the addiction, I suppose, had full control. But how sad that this person who had done so well publicly in a band, their final moments, they were, you know, it was very alone, really.
Yeah, really sad. Really sad for same thing for like Kurt Cobain, same thing for any of those guys.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, it was really sad. But I listened to them. And then I started getting back into kind of my dad's music. My dad loved Elton John too, but I didn't hear a lot of it growing up. I heard Benny and the Jets a lot. I remember my dad really liked that song, which I think is good. Yeah, I'm not sure off the top of my head what else. Nickelback, great Canadian band.
Yeah, I've seen them twice live. Brilliant.
Yeah. Everyone loves to hate on Nickelback, but I mean, I think they're sick. They're awesome.
Yeah, what is
not their newest album? I don't know, but
what is that about, though? I mean, they get an awful lot of flack over here as well, and they get called the Canadian Bon Jovi and all this. And
but Bon Jovi's awesome.
Yeah, I've seen Bon Jovi live 7 times. I've seen Nickelback live twice, and I just can't get what the hating is on them.
I think it's the original meme. It's the original pre-internet meme was you hate Nickelback.
Yeah.
It was kind of it was like the original internet meme, but I don't know. I mean, I think they're good. I mean, Chad Kroeger's one of the highest grossing songwriters in Canada ever. So he must be doing something right.
Do they have a lot of support back home in Canada, or do they get a lot of hating as well?
It's the same thing, but now they've kind of ruined it for themselves now because the newest album is not very good.
Okay, I haven't heard it.
Sorry, Nickelback, if you're listening, but it's not very good. But I think it kind of like started to scale back. Like people were like, oh yeah, they were kind of good. Like I think now if you tell, like before when I was a kid, if you were like, yeah, Nickelback's awesome, people would be like, you're an idiot. But now if you say it, people will be like, yeah, Nickelback's cool. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's still some. I also run in very small circles, so my echo chamber is pretty much exclusively my band, and we all like Nickelback. So.
Yeah, it's funny though. Over here in Ireland, you too get an awful lot of flack from people.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. Is that a thing? Like people don't like you too.
Yeah, it was like I remember, you know, this whole war in Ukraine, and the joke that was doing the rounds. Bono obviously went to Ukraine and he met with the President Zelensky, and the Irish people all that day in social media was like, Jesus, aren't the people in Ukraine going through with enough now without having Bono visit them?
I mean, ever since the putting the album on the iPhone thing or whatever, that was really the end, the beginning of the end. I mean,
and I don't know why people whinged and moaned so much about it. If you don't want to listen to it, don't listen to it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway.
But I do also like you too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Radiohead. I like all those because, I mean, they were Coldplay influences too. So you can hear that.
Yeah.
And the Coldplay music, especially Radiohead. I like them too.
Yeah, and I hear an awful lot of the Edge's guitaring is in Coldplay's guitaring as well. There's an awful lot of similarities.
Yeah, very simple kind of riff, yeah.
Less is more exactly. Kind of thing, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so the second song that you've chosen to talk is Train. I love this one. Why did you choose this one?
I think this is, it's kind of an in-between between the slower kind of ballady stuff and the faster rock stuff. It's like, it was kind of the first one I had done during the same time. It was kind of the beginning of the pandemic. I wrote most of these except for Save Me, but it was another one where it was kind of like, I found myself in the cycle of, you know, partying and then not taking care of myself. And then my friends wanted me to go back out and it felt kind of like the subway or like the train passes by and you can't, you have to get on. Where else are you going to go?
Mm.
And so it was kind of like, an interpretation or like a visualization of that feeling. And it was very like dramatic and, you know, I visually made it like, you know, I thought it was almost like a Wild West kind of thing.
Okay.
You know, in my head, it was almost like walking around with no shoes and it's 1880 and you have to get on this train to get to where you're going. I don't know exactly, but the feeling essentially was like, I'm going to do something to change the behavior, and that something is writing a song about changing the behavior or trying to.
Do you find songwriting therapeutic?
100%. It's the best way. I get overwhelmed very easily, and I have trouble seeing all of a situation until I kind of take a breath and think about it for a minute.
Mm.
And I think writing is the best way to kind of deal with anything, whether it's like love related or just something that's bothering you in your mind or anxiety or anything. The best thing I found for me, I mean, when I originally was writing, I was writing for myself for years before I was trying to even like record or do anything like that. And that's always what it was. If there's some kind of event in my life where I was unsure about something, it would always come. It would always be writing that would help me out.
Okay. And did you use the pandemic well for writing? Because I know a lot of artists over here and a lot of them didn't write during the pandemic. They kind of lost their creative juices because it was like, how did you react to that? Did you use the time well?
Yeah, it was such a like obviously dangerous and scary and sad time. But for me, it was like it was the perfect timing for me. I mean, it sounds awful to say pandemic was awful, but in terms of my usage of time, I went back to my parents' place where I went to high school and all that. And I like immediately read at the start. And that's all I did was write.
Mm.
Nothing else but write.
And how was that going back home?
It was good. It was good. Me and my parents have a pretty good relationship. They're amazing people. Very supportive. I have an older brother who's in like the acting kind of world, and they supported him and encouraged him. And so it was good. You know, I kept to myself a lot, and I think that's where, you know, a lot of the EP came from.
Yeah.
Basically that whole EP was written during the first 2 months of the pandemic in my parents' basement. And I think, yeah, it was how I just needed to have a reason to not leave my bedroom and to just write, and no one was doing anything.
It was a weird
Nothing
time.
Nothing was going on.
Yeah.
No one cared. Stuff was still on TV and all that, and that still went on, but like nothing, nobody was doing anything. And so like no one was bothering me. There was nothing to do. The most I had to do was, you know, go to the grocery store and think I was going to die if I touched something. But
I know.
Other than that, I just stayed in my room and I wrote like hell, and eventually it clicked. I think I wasn't quite ready. I had moved to Toronto in 2017. I wasn't quite ready to be an artist yet. I think I thought I was, but I had some learning to do. And I worked with a lot of people. Then the pandemic hit and something finally clicked while I was trying to write like something every day. And something finally clicked where I was like, oh, I get it now. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is my style. This is what I want to say. This is my message. I finally fully understood what it was about. And that was during that time.
That is kind of like an epiphany, isn't it? That must have kind of been a wow moment for yourself.
Yeah, it was unexpected. I think probably everybody around me knew it was going to happen at some point. I was going to figure it out. But I didn't think necessarily I was, or I thought I already had figured it out. One of those two, just who I am and who I was. And yeah, I used the time very wisely.
And would that kind of be indicative of your personality anyway? As you said, a lot of people knew you were going to find it out. And would that be, no matter what, you're only going to figure it out when you figure it out and in your time?
Yeah, I definitely have to do things my way. That's ever since I was a kid, my parents would say the same thing. Like, if you tell me to do something, I'm definitely not going to do it. if you're like, you have to do this, I'm going to be like, hell no, I don't want to do that.
Even if it goes against your morals?
Not well, there's certain limits.
Okay.
There's certain limits, but majority of stuff, and it's not that I won't do it, but I have to do it my way. And if you don't want to do it my way, then I get frustrated. And it's just part, and I've learned and I've grown as a person, obviously, since I was a kid. And so I'm not as intense about things like that. But I definitely was an extremely tough child to raise. bless my parents for figuring it out and letting me kind of figure my way out and
be yourself.
I would say that's definitely, that's definitely part of it is I told you I have control issues. I like the control.
Now going forward, as your career flourishes and progresses and you're going to have to collaborate with people and work with people. Are you ready for that? I mean, is that control part of you ready for that?
On the music side, it's very much subdued.
Okay.
Because on the music side, even from the first time I collaborated with people, you can tell really quick right away if you're going to mesh with people or not.
Yeah.
And when you find the right people to mesh with, all of the concerns of control go out the window.
Good.
Because you know that all the people that you're surrounding yourself with, you love what they do, they love what you do, and no matter what, you're going to eventually have an amazing product. And of course, there's disagreements, but there's disagreements with everything. It's a lot more subdued in the whole music world, creative world, I would say, for me.
And I guess, too, when you do make that connection with somebody musically then anyway, it's not like work. It's, as a matter of fact, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like work at all. When stuff's moving like that, it doesn't feel like work at all, I would say. Okay. It's the best part when you can find collaborators that you walk in and it's like the best day ever, every day.
Yeah.
On top of doing what I love all the time.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll have a listen to the song and we'll come back and chat some more.
Okay
so this is the second song that Talk has chosen for this week, and this is Train.
Early one.
I always say, what music needs more of today are guitar solos.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. That's so funny, because it's my favorite part of pretty much all the songs that I've done. That's all the guitars, and so I was going to tell you, that song's fully produced by myself and my guitar player, Connor, who's my co-collaborator on every song I've ever made.
Okay.
He's one of my best friends, and we live together, and he's, I think, the most incredible guitar player in the world. He plays all those crazy solos, all those parts. Yeah, and that song just kind of came out of nowhere. It was a sample that a friend had sent me, like that kind of washy guitar at the beginning, and then I built a whole song around it, sent it to Connor. Connor did all the guitars, sent it back, and I was like, wow, I haven't heard that in probably a year, that recording.
Really?
I would say, yeah, I've only heard it live because it's a bit different live. And so it was interesting hearing that again. I haven't listened to that song in forever.
Yeah, well.
The recording in forever.
Class. And that's it. I mean, it's just a great song. Even the beginning, early walk out on the track. I love this. I could kick rocks, but they'd kick me right back.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of that one, I'll be honest. That was a good line. Yeah. And that song was quick again. Like that song from when I was working on it, like I wrote it fast, 30 minutes maybe. Mm. Maybe less, 20, 30 minutes. Usually it's a little bit longer for me. And that song specifically, that song in Runaway to Mars, but that song specifically, I remember being super fast. I remember one of my roommates, Drew, who helps me out with all the like marketing and stuff now, he left the house, went on a walk, and then came back, and that song was finished.
Wow.
And I played, I forget if he cried or not. I probably shouldn't say that, but I think he cried because he was like, this is incredible. Like, this is a new thing. And I think we were both shocked. It just like worked. It was one of those times where the stars aligned.
And it's funny, every time I listen to it and the bit, time and time the train passed by going choo, 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 I always find myself, and my daughter caught me recently enough, doing this choo, choo, choo. She walked in and she was like, Dad? And I had headphones on, so I didn't even attempt to explain it.
that's great. I think it also, like that one specifically, it feels like kind of a 50s or 60s song that's been kind of transplanted into a modern sound. But I can imagine those lyrics and that in a style of like a 50s thing with that exact.
And even the guitar solo, the guitar solo was something like the Mamas and Papas era. There's just that lovely tone on it.
Yeah, it's a little bluesy and a little like, yeah. He did a great job. He's amazing. I think he's the greatest.
Now, when you write a song, right, everyone has a different process. You know, some people, like take Chris Martin, and I love when Chris Martin talks about his process of songwriting.
Yeah, me too.
That he just feels like he's this vessel, and it comes to him. And with him, it's kind of the middle of the night. Now, with yourself, what kind of a process do you have? Is there a set time that it comes to you? Is it lyrics first, music first, melody first? What's...
I have an almost identical experience to him. Okay. And I think that's why I see so closely, so our visions are so closely aligned and why everything he does resonates with me. I think there's a witching hour between, 2 and 4 a.m. where if you're awake and you're ready to receive something that sometimes like I'll just, it's such a weird thing to talk about because it sounds crazy. But it's like turning a radio in your own head and you're just like, and then you think you're hearing a song or you hear something in your head and you're like, oh, that sounds great, but that doesn't sound like anything I've heard before. Quick, get the phone, try and sing what you're hearing. That's the next issue. And then the next issue after that is you're half asleep when you do it. So the next day when you listen to it, it doesn't make as much sense as it's making in the moment. That I would say melody is probably first for me, melody or riff or like rhythm. And then the words come after that.
There's a lot of humming going on, is there?
A lot of humming. Yeah, a lot of humming for sure. Every writer can attest to this, but like thousands of voice notes on my phone and some of them, you wake up the next day and they're not as good as you thought they were. But in your head in the moment, I think how most of the songs happen. Like around that time, like 1 a.m., like midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., sitting on a bed with an acoustic guitar and just just hearing something. I don't know. It's super weird. It's super weird to think about. It just happens. I can't explain it.
I find it so amazing. Like back in the day, I'm 52 now, but when I was your age, I used to also play with bands, and like that, it could come any time. Now, the time I grew up, there was no phones for voice notes, so I used to carry a notebook, and I used to have a little dictaphone. So I often was on a bus trying to hum something, and people not hear me, and they'd be looking, going, "What is your man up to?"
I can imagine that. I mean, the tape. I remember Dave Grohl talks about like the tape recorder that he used, you know, in his bedroom to try and put ideas down and record and stuff. I mean, it's definitely one good thing about technology now. I think we're probably getting some songs that wouldn't exist.
Yeah. Have you ever been in contact with Chris Martin? Have you ever crossed his path?
Not really, no. I know Runaway to Mars was played for him, but I don't know anything more than that, really.
Okay.
I'm hoping to. I'm really hoping. I'd just like to say thank you, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have no requests or anything for him, or I wouldn't ask him to do anything. Just say thanks and... You know, I don't think I'd be here without him, so...
It could be one of those moments where talk can't talk.
I tried to imagine that conversation. If I can't sleep, I imagine kind of scenarios and stuff to try and help with anxiety and like work my way through a situation, or just imagine the future or try and get my head off something. And every time I've imagined that conversation, I've probably thought about it for the last 10 years. And every time I've thought about it, I don't know what I would say.
Yeah.
I can't figure it out. And I always know what to say.
Yeah.
I always do. And I don't know what the hell I would say other than just thank you and try and give him a hug if he wants a hug.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all I can imagine. I mean, he'll probably ask me questions.
It might be one of those situations where your mind is blown and he starts raving about one of your tunes.
I mean, I don't know if I'd be able to handle that. That'd be pretty intense. That's a good one. I'll think about that scenario, though. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the third song that you picked, and I have to say, I love this song for so many, many reasons. Hollywood. I mean, why did you pick this one?
I love this song, too. I think this was the song, this was a little bit later in the pandemic, but when I finished this song, it was the first time where I was like, this is me. We found these big harmonies. You know, it's a song about my, it's not about my mom, but it's for my mom. I was traveling in Los Angeles for the first time, and it was kind of just before or just like at a break in the pandemic. So I forget exactly what it was. And I was overlooking the city, and she called me and she said, like, you know, I miss you. Come home. We have a great relationship. And I hadn't been home in a long time. And I just said, Mom, if you need me, I'll be in Hollywood.
Nice.
And then I put the phone down and I was like, holy shit, like this is a good song. And at the time I was sitting in kind of a studio house and the studio was being used and I wanted to put it down. I wanted to like write it right away. So I just ran upstairs with the three chords on my phone. I just picked up a guitar, played three chords. I was like, oh, it's perfect. Ran upstairs, wrote it very fast again and came back down like an hour later, recorded it, sent it to my team. Which at that time we were just a couple guys in Toronto that we, there was no plans yet of like what we were doing. And they're like, this is it. This is like, this is the closest you've come to your sound yet.
Mm. When I hear it, like the era I grew up in. So, you know, rock music for me in the 80s and the 90s and even before grunge came in, when you had your Poison and your Bon Jovi and all this, that's the kind of the very start where it's kind of like you're not in studio where you're just sitting around a studio and you sing the first bit and then the song kicks in and you end the song again with that. That to me kind of sparkles of that time and walking down the Hollywood Walk of Fame and then, you know, driving through LA with the palm trees and there's no roof on the car. That's the kind of vibe, the feeling I get when I hear it all the time.
And that's the feeling I had. And it's funny because those little split decisions, split second decisions of, hey, let's record this outside of the studio. We just brought a mic into the hallway and just did it in the air. And it ended up being like a big part of it.
Yeah.
You know, all these little decisions come to make a great song. And to finish the song and to perfect it, it took a while. I mean, it was sitting around for a couple of months and then we had re-recorded some stuff and gone back in and done the solo, which I think is one of the best solos.
It's killer.
I've heard in a long time.
Is that your buddy again? Connor, is it?
That's Connor again. Yeah, we do everything together. he absolutely blew my mind. Every time we work together, he blows my mind. And so that's another control thing, you know, like what I was talking about. When you find someone that you think is just the greatest of all time, they think you're great, you're going to make great stuff, and you fully trust that person. And that's for sure what we have.
Yeah. Now, we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and we chat some more. Okay, so sure. This is the third song that Talk has chosen, and this is the very rock and roll Hollywood.
To fly to the star-studded town, I always had people try to shoot me down. It won't last, they said, it won't change. No matter how hard you try, your life will stay the same.
Guitar solo is just, you get the feels of it.
Yeah, it's great.
Does Connor play in the band with you then, your live touring band?
Yeah, he's my musical director too.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
We don't get a break from each other. He's way back here now. He's with his parents. That's the only break we've had each other is the holidays. And now every day I gotta look at his handsome face again.
Yeah, I know. Well, I suppose there's always a downside to rock and roll, isn't there?
Always a downside.
Now, your band that you have on tour with you. Now, I read somewhere that you're a multi-instrumentalist, so you play the vast majority of the instruments on the EP. Is that correct? Connor.
So the thing is Connor's so good that I don't really have to play that much anymore. He's also an amazing bass player and a good drummer too, and a great producer. Right now when I'm playing live, I'm focusing on just singing.
Yeah.
I think in the next tour, the next shows kind of coming up this year, I'll be playing piano probably for something or some kind of thing. That's probably my thing. I'm best at piano and kind of producing and stuff, but I can play everything. I'm just not as good as the guys I have. So I'm very mediocre at everything, but the guys I have are true professionals and truly amazing in each instrument. So.
You're bluffing and you're good at bluffing. Is that what you're saying? and this band now, did I read somewhere, do you all live together?
Most of us live together, yeah. So in the house right now, we have my drummer, Carter, my guitar player, Connor, myself, my kind of marketing genius, who I work on all the social media with, his name is Drew. And then some of our girlfriends live here. And so it's not a big house, but there's a lot of people. But my bass player, Waylon, stays here whenever we're practicing or how we have shows.
Okay.
So we spend a lot of time together. The idea was to do it like an old school rock band, you know, trying bands that live together and like AC/DC and all those guys who were always together, always the chemistry is just building.
Yeah.
And for live, it's I think we have a great live show. I'm very proud of what we do.
I love the line, "It won't last," they said. It won't change. No matter how hard you try, your life will stay the same. That's like a two fingers up to the people, the begrudgers, eh?
Yeah. And to be honest, I always had a lot of support. You know, this is a very select few group of people I'm talking to who maybe thought I was a joke or wasn't very good or anything like that. And that's fine. People are entitled to their opinion. But in general, I've been supported immensely. All my friends, all my family, anytime I said I was going to do this or try and do this, it was always support and never.
Like you started playing, like you got your first drum kit when you were 4 or 5. And what I read was lovely then is your dad, when you were, I think a teenager, got your Pro Tools, right? Which is incredible, yeah. Right? How supportive. Yeah. But there must have...
I think I was 12. I was 12 when I got Pro Tools.
That's incredible. But there must have come... So, I mean, you were always into it. You were always immersed with it. It was your everything. And I get that. But there must have come a point where you realized that, oh, okay, I'm okay at this and we could spread a message worldwide here.
Yeah, I think it took a little while because I think I thought I was good and I thought, but I hadn't kind of fully developed yet. I moved from Ottawa, Canada to Toronto. I'm from Ottawa in 2017. And I think it
and you were young. That was quite young to make that move, eh?
I was probably 21 when I moved, I'd say 21. Maybe 22, I forget. All the years are mixed up. But it took me a few years to kind of realize, and I think really, I mean, I have a lot of self-doubt, and I think a lot of artists do. It's a normal thing. And you have a bit of an imposter syndrome. And I think when I released the EP in 2021, I was kind of expecting what happened in 2022 to happen then.
Okay.
And it took another full year to kind of take off, and I started... I would say for the first time where I was like, oh, I'm really going to do it or going to have a shot at doing it was this past summer. And I think before that, there was always doubts. But now I don't really have any doubt anymore. I know it's in me and I'm capable and I have a great team around me. But it probably took until then. So it was like a decade of I don't really know if I'm good enough.
And things, it must have been that feeling of things getting real when you suddenly went from being the boy in the bedroom, you know, writing and producing to suddenly being this guy, you've now got a team around you and excuse the expression, but shit just got real.
Yeah, shit did get real. Yeah, this past summer for sure, shit got real. I mean, I had signed a record deal the March before that. And I think that was probably the first time where I was like, oh, this is real now. Mm.
When you had that realization, how did that feel?
I would say... I felt very validated because I think I put so much effort and panic and worry, and I don't have many skills outside of this, you know, like music is my skill and writing is a skill. And that's what I put my time into for the last 10 years. And so I'm not a skilled worker in any way. I don't have secondary education. This is kind of my thing. And so I didn't really have a backup plan. And so a lot of it was just anxiety coming off, weight off the shoulders, validation. Definitely after a little bit, definitely some nerves and some, am I good enough again? And I think that's always going to continue. I asked some friends of mine who've been in it for a long time, and they said that never changes. You always kind of feel like if you don't try your absolute hardest at all times, it's going to just disappear. And I think there's reality to that. I think you can't just sit back and let your life happen. You have to try and push forward, especially as an artist. And it's so competitive now, especially with the social media stuff. And you have to put all you can into it. And whenever you're taking a break, it feels like you shouldn't be. And so I think that that feeling's always there and the nerves are always there. But I think now I feel like I can really do it.
Unreal. Brilliant. I have to say in the song Hollywood, I love when you go into the first kind of chorus, you know, Mama, if you need me, I'll be in Hollywood. And it's kind of, because the song, it kind of builds and then it arrives, but then going back into the next verse, you kind of chill out again. And it's like, you're teasing us with this rock and roll. You come back out, but then when you go back into the next chorus, then it just blows up. Guitar solo, everything.
Yeah, I think it was definitely intentional to pull it back again, because I think it's kind of, it's the song's a bit of a conversation and a bit of a story, and you know, dynamics and stuff are important. And that again, yeah, it was just, it was a quick song, and not, we didn't have to try and add parts or try and it all just was there. And yeah, I tried to make it a little subdued in the second part. And
what did your mama think of it?
She loves it. She's very happy that she has a song dedicated to her.
Yeah.
My father is reminds me constantly that he's waiting for his.
Yeah, that'll have to be on the album, bud.
Yeah, and grandmother too. Oh. She's my grandmother has one on the next album, but my dad, I haven't figured it out yet. We'll have to see.
Yeah, yeah. He'll be the Grammy.
He would be happy if I just did a Beatles cover, honestly.
He'll be the Grammy acceptance speech. That's what he'll be.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Exactly. Okay, so the final song, and we'll move on to, is I guess the one that, it's got the tens of millions of plays on Spotify. Yeah. It's the song I was introduced to you with as well. Of course, I'm talking about Runaway to Mars.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask the question, silly question, why did you pick this one?
I think, you know, this was the song that started it all. It was my first ever release as an artist, and it stood the test of time. And it really, I thought the attention that it had this past year was going to happen when I released the EP, like I said. And I think, you know, this is it. To me, this is one, I think artists can pick apart their songs after release. They're like, oh, I wish I would have done that different. Wish I would have done that different. This song, I can tell you straight up, there's nothing I could ever improve. I've tried to remake the song. I made a bunch of versions of the song.
Yeah, you had a strings version came out there a couple of months back.
That one, it was like a different category. But in terms of like before the song came out, it was like, can I make this better? Can I change any of these parts? Can I change the production? And everything I tried was an absolute catastrophic failure. This recorded version is the closest to the original, which is just a voice note of me sitting on my bed playing it.
Okay.
And I recorded the same thing. The only thing that's changed, we actually recorded it in Connor's basement, not in a recording studio, except for the vocals, but all the guitars and stuff were recorded in a basement, just like on a laptop. And nothing's changed since then. It was the best way to do it. And I think it's close to 100 million streams, I think, worldwide now. I'm not sure exactly.
Wow. That's unreal. Isn't that unreal, though? Do you know what I mean?
It's like, crazy.
You know, you wrote this in a basement or sitting on a bed. You were feeling crappy, wondering, would anybody really care? And now suddenly, when you even say those words, 100 million streams. So that's crazy. Essentially a third of America has listened to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's I don't even know how many countries it's at right now. I think it's like gold in Norway and Sweden, and it's platinum in Canada.
I actually played it on our radio station last week. I was doing a show, and I'm the first one to have played it, I think, in Cork anyway.
Thank you.
Possibly Ireland.
Thank you. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think it kind of it grew to something bigger than me, and that was I was totally okay with that. You know, people would know the song and not necessarily know who I was. And that's 100% fine with me because people found meaning in it. And that's what I wanted people to do. I always wanted to help. That was the original goal ever since like I had listened to Coldplay and felt a way about them. I wanted to do what they did for me for other people. And that's what Runaway to Mars did. And I got thousands of DMs that I was answering 400 or 500 DMs a day.
Wow.
Of people just telling me everything they wanted to get off their chest. And it was a tough thing to manage for a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because
you don't want to ignore anyone. You don't want to, and now it's fine. But I knew at the time that I had to put the time in, even though it was a lot to handle and a lot to answer and a lot to take on those emotions. I think it was important because a lot of those people probably wouldn't have said anything to anyone.
Yeah.
And I was a stranger and I had just written something they liked. And so I think it's important to everyone feel seen and heard. And so I took on that responsibility and I'm happy I did that. And I think a lot of people felt really helped by okay. it. And so that's what I wanted.
So we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and we'll chat some more. Okay, so this is the final song that Talk has chosen on the podcast this week. And this is the wonderful Runaway to Mars.
Fading, 'cause I kept you waiting. It's a wild, wild world, and you're a wild, wild girl. Our sun's still shining, but it seems half the size, and it's a wild, wild world.
The lyric, and it's the lyric in the chorus. What if I run away to Mars? Would you find me in the stars? Would you miss me in the end if I run out of oxygen? That's a miserable moment.
Yeah, no, definitely. I still don't exactly know what I was thinking when I wrote it. I know it was 2 a.m. I still have the original voice note. I only have one voice note from that night, and usually if I'm writing a song, I have a bunch of them. Like each part, just an offering at each part. But that one, I just played all the way through. I'm missing the pre-chorus and the melody's a bit different. But essentially, the song all came out at once again. That's probably the quickest I've written a song.
When you normally write a song, and you know when you, because it seems to me that you write the initial part first. Is the finished product pretty much what you had in your head when you?
Yeah, I think for this one, yes. I think as soon as I started recording it, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then I showed a bunch of, like, I call them my mirrors, just like people that I can, that'll bounce be honest with me and give me feedback. I showed it to all of them, and there's like the reaction was not what I expect normally. Like, I share a lot of music with my friends just to get an idea of what people think.
Yeah.
And it was like an unprecedented, like, holy shit kind of moment.
When you saw that reaction from them, there must have been that thought in your head of, oh man, I actually am really onto something here now.
I had something, yeah. And that was back in, April. No, that was back in 2020 was the pandemic year. First pandemic year.
That was
April of 2020.
Okay, so we were only just at the beginning of it all, really, then.
And when I had sent it around, and then that song sat for the full year until June 2021 when it came out.
And TikTok is one of the social media sites that... Yeah. That song heavily kind of broke on, isn't it?
Yeah, the first time I had uploaded the cover of House of the Rising Sun in 2021, like March maybe. And for some reason, I just like thought that would be a good idea. I didn't really listen to the song that much. My dad did. But I just like could see it in my head of this TikTok and me doing this thing. And I had tried to make TikToks for like a year before that to try and get some kind of traction, and nothing was working. I just like had this vision of doing it, and it blew up. And then we were like, oh, I guess we should show some original music. And Mars was done, but we didn't have any of the infrastructure in place for release, like distribution or anything. We were like, oh, let's just do it. And the response, again, was like, what is this song? And so when it came out in June of that year, I was expecting what happened in July of this year to happen.
Yeah.
It goes global, because I just knew the like small sample size I had, that it was resonating with everyone I shared it with. And I was like, well, if these people don't lie to me, they tell me when the song sucks and they're telling me that they listen to it every day. Like your friends, like sharing music with your friends, they're not going to listen to it every day. They're going to listen to like Drake or something. But they were like, I could see on my SoundCloud link that it was just hundreds of plays every day from friends. And so I knew it was good. And the first time it just, the snowball didn't get big enough to keep rolling. Like it got a couple million streams, and you know, it got playlisted on stuff, and it was good, it was great. But it really was the second time where the snowball got big enough this past summer. It was on the back of playing for like 70,000 people in Quebec City.
Nice.
I don't know how my agents got that gig either. They just somehow did it. And we just thought it'd be great footage to show no crowd and then a crowd and like a 3-2-1 kind of thing. Yeah. And you just can't see any grass. You can only see people. And so we put Mars behind it, and that blew up. And then I just kept posting Mars every day. And I don't think I'm ever going to post it again. Well, not for a while, because people were starting to get tired of it. And I understood. I just had to try. You know, it was my chance to make something happen. And it did, and it grew bigger than me, and now we're here.
Yeah, and I saw, speaking of large crowds, I mean, I saw there you got announced in some festival, is it in March? And you've got the Foo Fighters. Foo Fighters on that bill?
Yeah. That's going to be amazing, because that's the first time I've...
You're high up the bill as well, which is yay.
I'm hoping to have a cool slot. I'm not sure exactly. I don't know what the slot is, but last time I was in the town that the Foo Fighters were in, I was too poor to get a ticket. I couldn't afford it. I just quit my job to try and do music. And so I couldn't afford a ticket, and I could hear it from my apartment in Ottawa. I was at a festival called Blues Fest. I could hear the show, and I had some friends over there, but I couldn't go. And so this will be the first time I could see them.
And did you support Shania Twain, or are you due to support her in some dates
in Canada?
I'm going
to in October. Yeah.
That is huge.
Yeah, that's another big one.
Yeah.
That was the first CD my parents ever bought me, was Shania Twain.
Really?
Yeah, so it's very much come full circle, and she doesn't bring a lot of men on the road, and so I was really honored that she chose to give that honor to me.
I'd imagine there was a lot of happy dances in your family kitchen when you told them that news.
Yeah, I was on the road. I was in North Carolina, I think, when I found out, and I called my parents. They were very excited, my whole family, because I'm playing Quebec City, Montreal. My mom's from Quebec, and a lot of my family's from Quebec, and then Toronto, which is my kind of now hometown. And they're all arena shows, and I've never played arenas before. So
oh, wow.
It was all around. It was kind of a shock, but a very happy day.
I can imagine your mother, you know, I don't know what Canadian mothers are like, right? But Irish mothers, right? That if that was me in the same situation, my mother would be outside the auditorium going, that's my son.
Yeah, 100%. It would be that and like, well, why aren't they paying you more? Well, why aren't they, like, they owe you, you have to be the number, why isn't she opening for you? My mother's very much like that.
You can't be mama's, eh?
No, you can't. She's the best. I wouldn't change her at all.
Now, one thing also I just want to touch on before we finish up, your manager, because I'm from Cork in Ireland, and there's a Cork connection with you. Your manager's mother is from Cork.
Yes. Cormac McGee, a good Irish lad, good Irish name on him.
Do you know what part of Cork she's from? This is a typical Cork question to ask, by the way.
I don't. If he was here, he would tell you, but I'm not sure.
And does she still have a Cork accent?
I don't know. I she sounds like you.
Okay, well then she does.
There you go. Also, another strange thing we figured out was I have Irish in my family too, and my grandmother's maiden name was McGee.
Okay.
As well as his.
Don't say you're related.
Maybe you never know. You never know. We could be related and found ourselves together years later. Who knows?
Mad. And how did you come across Cormac?
He came across me. He had worked with another guy in Toronto, and that gentleman was helping me out for a while. But he moved on to other things, and we kind of parted ways. But Cormac kind of always believed, and I loved working with him, and we make a very, very good team.
Okay.
I think he's the smartest guy I know, and he thinks I'm the smartest guy he knows. So.
There you go. That's magical.
It works well.
So what does 2023 look like for you, SoTalk? What's going to be happening?
A lot of shows. I'm hoping as many as possible. I love playing live. And then the other thing is releasing an album.
Okay.
Has been my goal for years. I did an EP and it didn't satisfy the need to release an album. And so I'm hoping, I have no idea, summer, fall, I'm hoping an album comes out. Singles before that. There's some great songs and I'm really proud of it. And so I'm hoping.
As I say, it was a girl I'm working introduced me to you, and she just sent me Runaway to Mars, and immediately I fell in love with it. And then of course I went on a bit of a rabbit hole, and then I found your EP, and I always remember I was waiting for the bus to go and visit my parents, and I was messaging her going, Jesus Christ, this EP is just as good as that song on its own. I said, this dude is incredible. I said, we need more music. So I'm so excited to hear the more music when it comes.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't see the EP. And so, you know, it is kind of a random collection of songs that I just thought were good and the best I had at the time to accompany Runaway to Mars. But this album's very cohesive that I'm working on now. It's very me and I'm very excited about it.
And will we see you over here in Ireland at some stage?
I'm hoping so. I mean, there's talks of coming and doing a show at some point before the end of the year. So. I'd love to. I mean, I want to go to Tata Land, which is, I think it's called something different now, Irish Gardens or something, I just learned, which is a rubbish name. It should still be called Tata Land. Yeah, and come and meet the good Irish people. Yeah. I'd love to do it.
Yeah.
I've never been.
So and if you do come over here, I am certainly going to go to the show, and don't you worry, I will be in touch beforehand to say we've got to meet for a pint, which is one of the most Irish things.
Yeah, we definitely will.
I just want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're definitely somebody I think has got the biggest and brightest future ahead.
Thank you.
And one last thing. I love your style on stage. I love your outfits. I love the makeup.
Thank
I love it all. It's
okay, amazing. Thank you. That's my girlfriend. She's not here right now. I think she left, but she's my stylist too, so she does all my outfits. And
wow.
We work together and everything, but she's amazing. Everybody around me is the best at what they do, and so I'm very fortunate.
And you know what? Yeah, keep those group of people around you, because when the waters get a little bit hostile as you move up the ranks, they'll be the ones that'll keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. I'm 100% sure of it.
Thanks a million, man. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you.